This is The Topic is Trek, episode 13 for Friday, January 26, 2018. Fidget Spinner of Death. Welcome to The Topic is Trek, the podcast that runs on impulse power. Join us for a journey where no show has gone before. If it has to do with Star Trek, there's a good chance we'll talk about it. Sooner or later, because on this show, the topic is Trek. Engage already! I can't engage. I'm already married. That's how it works. Well, hello, everyone. I'm one of your co-hosts, Clinton Allvord, and beaming in from sickbay this week, apparently, to join me, as always, is Chuck Tomasi.
Often imitated and heavily medicated.
And from the bridge, as far away as possible from sickbay, Mr. Craig Stepp.
From the mirror side of the desk.
Ooh, do you have your goatee all set to go there?
It's actually a full beard, but yes.
He had to draw one on with coffee grounds.
Yeah.
You just drink a chocolate milk or something and you're good. No problem.
Yeah, that's right.
So we've got a lot to talk about this week.
Yes, we do.
Both in terms of the show. We got some fun news articles to get through, and then we have an exciting and controversial, perhaps, Warp Speed Roundtable. So let's get started with our subspace chatter. And we're going to see now what's happening in and around the Trek universe. We'll start things off with Chuck talking about something that was lost is now found.
I love it. Think you've seen every episode of Star Trek, the original series, and know everything about them? Ha ha ha, think again. Star Trek Lost Scenes, due out in August from Titan Books, is written by Trek experts and frequent StarTrek.com guest bloggers David Telota and Kurt McElhoney. I hope I said that even close. I'll just blame it on medication as if it's not right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And packed with hundreds of carefully curated, never-before-seen color photos. All images have been professionally restored to their original, vibrant colors and are used to chronicle the making of the series, reassemble deleted scenes that were left on the cutting room floor, and showcase bloopers from the first pilot through the last episodes. And there were some dandies in here that they showcased.
There are a few some.
Yeah, there's of course, the occasional smiling Spock, which is always fun to see.
Yeah.
There's some nice touch-ups where it looks like almost before and after makeup.
And actually, then, the one of Kirk, with it's like a split view. Yeah. It looks like he's got a sunburn on one side.
It looks like he was beat up.
Here's what happens when you stay out the sun.
My favorite is the Malkot with the fake mustache and glasses is my favorite.
Yeah, right.
I didn't even see the mustache until I was trying to read the fine print. I'm like, what? I see the glasses.
It's hard to see it.
And then they got human hands up there twirling the tips of his mustache. I mean, it's just definitely a lot of fun.
It's a Robert Justman kind of look to it.
I also like that where they're showing the ship, like the model, and the guy's holding the clapperboard, and he's got his shirts on. Kind of breaks the illusion, doesn't it?
Hey, dude, you could have at least buttoned your shirt.
I know.
And why do you need a clapperboard for a still shot of the ship?
Never mind that. How can you have a clapboard when it's in space and there's no sound? Think now about that.
If you use the clapboard, will they hear it?
Just repeat to yourself, it's just a show. I should really just relax.
So this article shows several pages from the book. And I will mention up front here that all the stories we're going to talk about in the news section, you can find links to those in the show notes for episode 13 of The Topic is Trek that you can find over at thetopicistrek.com. Excellent. There's the bell. All right. So go over there and you can see several. I'm surprised at how many pages they show in this article.
Yeah.
But it really goes into some fine detail. We've got sections of script. We've got background notes. As we talked about, some color tests of different things. Very, very interesting article.
700 pictures in this book.
700, not 699, 700 pictures.
Well, I wonder how big they are because there's only 272 pages.
How much would you pay for all of this? Don't answer yet. There's more.
That's right.
But speaking of Star Trek and classic Trek, we move now to Craig, who has...
Clinton, that was the worst segue for this show I've heard yet.
I just wait.
I said yet.
You know, yeah. when it takes a while to warm up. By the time we get to the last article, they'll be just flowing like water.
I'm looking forward to it.
Kind of now that they're flowing like sedimentary rock. I don't know what they're doing. Well, let's just move over now to Craig, who has an article about Trek and where it was banned.
Dun, dun, dun. Yes, not everybody's seen every episode, or at least back in the day. So while we're in America might look back at Star Trek, the original series, as a wholesome family fun, the rest of the world didn't always think it that way. In fact, there were a handful of episodes where the series... of the series that wasn't shown on TV in certain countries. While in the UK had this the strictest rules regarding what was considered suitable for its viewers, Germany banned an episode as well. I can see where this is going on that one.
I wonder what episode that might be.
The Tribble one.
Yes.
and obviously for a more understandable reason. Luckily, most of these episodes weren't totally impossible for Europeans to get a hold of. They were either aired later or Trek fans were able to screen them at conventions. Other episodes such as The Man Trap, Enemy Within, and Bread and Circuses were shown on TV. But violent scenes and Captain Kirk's doppelganger near attempted assault of Lieutenant Ram was edited out. So here are the five episodes that were outright banned in the 60s.
60s, man.
Yeah, man. What's up? All right, Miri. This episode featuring a society of children whose parents have all mysteriously died of disease was banned by the BBC because it dealt with most unpleasantly with already unpleasant subject. It's a lot of unpleasant stuff. Subject of madness, torture, sadism, and disease.
It's just nasty. It's nasty.
It was kind of a dirty episode.
It was. Well, they were all dirty. They had the dirt on their faces and everything.
Wipe your faces. All right. So number two, I'm going to
kind of reminded me of Peter Pan. You know, with the Lost Boys.
It did. That's right.
I was waiting for the answer to who Tinkerbell was in that. You know, Janice Rand? I don't know what was
going on. No, that was Charlie X.
Oh.
All right. So number two was Plato's Stepchildren. Plato's Stepchildren was lumped in with Miri for being banned for the BBC for violent content. However, the episode raised eyebrows on NBC executives in the U.S. for featuring the first interracial kiss on network TV between Michelle Nichols and William Shatner. Execs were afraid the scene would cause a backlash from conservatives. And you know what's funny is that is so tame compared to today.
Right. And I don't think, if I remember correctly, that they really didn't get a lot of backlash on it, which surprised them.
Yes. Yeah. Well,
In the UK? Or
no, in the US.
Oh, in the US. And that is funny.
All right. So number three is The Empath. If torture was a reason, Miri and Plato's stepchildren, and you can see this is all building on each other, it looks like, were banned by the BBC. There's no wonder why The Empath was. Though there wasn't any real outright graphic violence in the episode, as Kirk and Spock and McCoy are tortured and chained up by aliens called Vians, as part of the experiment. They're locked in a chamber with mysterious women, hello, who turn out to be an empath. The Vians torture the men in an effort to see if she is compassionate enough to have her species saved. And I do have to say, seeing Kirk hanging like that, just kind of weird.
It doesn't very look strong. Right. Very strong. He can hold his hand straight out.
There are four lights.
You ever thought about joining the circus? But it's just the way his legs hanging. You know, I know he's got something holding him. So it's,
yeah.
But it just looks funny. Wait a minute. I hope they didn't tie it to his.
Hey, now. So the interesting thing about that is, you know, like, the aliens are probably thinking, if we can just get Jem to ask us to stop, and then the other guy goes, you realize she's a mute, right?
Yeah. Oh, we forgot.
Yeah. All you have to do is say the word.
Yeah. All right. So, whom gods destroy. By now, you have learned that torture was frowned upon in the British television.
Torture!
Torture!
So we're however, green women.
However, this isn't the only reason. Whom Gods Destroy was originally aired in the UK. In the UK. The main reason was Brits weren't originally able to tune in. Was actually one of the most famous scenes in the show's history. The risque performance by Marta, the Orion slave girl. Despite the fact that Spock says the dance reminds him of dances done by kids in Vulcan nursery school. It wasn't deemed suitable for children.
Well, so, you know, those Vulcans are pretty risque as kids.
So yeah. The fact that she's sent out into the outside environment and dies, that's okay.
Right.
It's the dancing they had a problem with. All right. Sure, just want to be sure I understand. Okay.
Wasn't it because I thought it was because she showed her belly button or something. That was the
cleavage.
I thought it was, who was that? We're talking about they couldn't show their belly button, so they had to hike up the skirt. So it did, probably several people from the 60s, I guess. So,
yes.
Number five is patterns of force. While we might scoff at the idea of Star Trek being too violent for British kids, I'm scoffing. that's Chuck's.
Don't get me started.
It's easy to understand why German wouldn't air Patterns of Force. The episode focuses on Kirk and company's search for a missing Federation historian who turns out to have manipulated an alien culture to take after their Third Reich. Despite the fact that the Federation is attempting to undo this wrong, there are swastikas abound and outfits just look a little too much like vintage uniforms. And I know that the Germans banned the sale and the display of the swastika and other German Nazi paraphernalia. So and this makes sense, of course.
Yeah. And it wasn't they sort of looked like them. They just went to casting and said, give us those.
If I'm not mistaken, wasn't some of those uniforms actual uniforms, not just for props?
Why would you have those in the costuming department? I mean, I don't know.
They buy stuff from everywhere. Where they go, they don't just make them all, but I don't know. I thought I read that recently that, some of those were actual uniforms. So
urban legend or truth. I'm not sure if you know the answer to that.
Yeah.
Please. You can, give us some information on our Facebook page. On Facebook/ The Topic is Trek. And we're going to go from things that you didn't get a chance to see if you lived in certain countries to recognition for things that you did see.
I was going to say people not seeing Star Trek is sad. So let's talk about something glad.
I see what you did there. I see what you did there. And you will too in a second. Star Trek Discovery, and this comes to us via TrekMovie.com. Star Trek Discovery picked up a few more award nominations today on top of those it has already garnered during the Hollywood Awards season. Yes, it's award seasons, folks. Here's a rundown. And first up, we have Jason Isaac is nominated for an Empire Award. Discovery's Captain Lorca has been nominated as Best Actor in a TV Series for the 2018 Empire Awards. He's up against actors from Big Little Skies, Twin Peaks, a limited event series. That's the actual name of the series, Twin Peaks, a limited event series. Anyway, The Crown and Legion. Next up, we have Discovery is nominated for a GLAAD Award. See, now that's a callback. You can see why Craig was.
Yeah.
Star Trek Discovery is up for a GLAAD Media Award, which recognizes and honors media for their fair, accurate, and inclusive representations of the lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer community and the issues that affect their lives. The show was nominated for Outstanding Drama Series, and it's up against Billions, Doubt, The Handmaid's Tale, Nashville, Sense8, Shadowhunters, Star, This Is Us, and Wynonna Earp.
Those are some pretty powerful competition shows. I know Sense8 was really highly acclaimed.
Absolutely. And The Handmaid's Tale is very... Next up, we have publicity nomination. Now, this confuses me. The International Cinematographers Guild revealed the nominees for its annual ICG Publicis Awards. So the cinematographers are giving out awards for publicity. Anyway, CBS publicist Kristen Hall has been nominated for the Maxwell Weinberg Publicity Showmanship Television Award. She was going up against publicists for Better Call Saul, Feud, Betty and Joan, Stranger Things 2, and The Orville.
Hmm.
And
the Orville's going to sweep it.
Yes. Yes. In addition to that, in case you missed it, there were previous Discovery Award nominations. The show is nominated for two awards by the Visual Effects Society Awards, Outstanding Visual Effects in Photorealistic Episode, which is, again, weird title, and Outstanding Composition in a Photoreal Episode. In addition, costume designer Gersher Phillips was nominated by the Costume Designers Guild for their annual award in Excellence in Sci-Fi / Fantasy Television. So congratulations to all the nominees. I wish I could add to this Doug Jones being nominated for the Shape of Water, but I think he's the only person who didn't get a nomination, just kind of getting that, we're in award season and just like...
Was he nominated for an award?
He was not. He was not nominated for his role in The Shape of Water.
Dang. But the picture was nominated, I think.
The picture was nominated for the most nominations of any movie for this year's Oscars. Mm-hmm. And I just feel like the same thing would happen with television, because I think that if you're behind makeup, a lot of times people don't get it. They don't get that you're still acting inside of makeup, or somebody like Andy Serkis who's acting and then things are put on top of that. Mm-hmm. So, but we're hoping that will change as time goes by.
Yeah. Andy's a big one, Doug Jones has been doing this for a long time too in makeup. So yeah, a lot of those things, especially with the CG part, I don't think they get enough. It's like puppetry. All right, Kermit is recognized, but the person behind the Kermit, other than Jim Henson,
That's right.
Who, what? Yeah, they don't get recognized. So
I say puppeteers need more recognition. Grant, where's my check? Okay.
That's right.
Let's move on from all these people being nominated for things and all those pieces being moved around of who's going to get an award.
Oh, boy.
To a story. I'm trying to get in that groove here. To a story about chess.
That wasn't a segue. That was a long walk around the lake.
Let's move over to Chuck.
Long walk, part of gift. There we go.
Checkmate.
That's what I say. Checkmate.
This is from Vice.com. In 1993, Max Chappell, an obscure board game designer from San Diego, California, loaded his Plymouth Voyager minivan with a bunch of funky-looking chess sets and headed north. We're on the road. A Star Trek convention was being held at the Westin Bonaventure in downtown Los Angeles, and Chappell smelled an opportunity to hawk his singular creation, a 3D chess game called
Hyper Chess. Yes, Hyper Chess is a tale of two obsessions, one with chess and the other with Star Trek. If one of these obsessions is more vital than the other, it would be Star Trek. To your average chess player, Hyper Chess was just a weird chess game. But to a subset of Trekkies in the mid-90s, Hyper Chess was a weird chess game that kind of looked like the iconic chessboard game from Star Trek, the original series. Star Trek fans just loved it, Chapel said, who is 69 years old, told me on the phone. They thought that my game was the original chessboard that was on TV, but it wasn't. It was actually a playable game. Wow, he just called out the set creators. That was actually no real playable. Man. You can't play it.
You didn't see the air quotes he was doing.
Much like Star Trek's famed prop, Chapel's chessboards are inscrutable. Looking at one is enough to make your head spin. While regular chessboards lay flat on a surface, Chapel's chessboards stand nearly 3 feet tall with laser-cut surfaces of asymmetrical shapes staggering in a helical pattern around lamp rods. It resembles one of those multi-level cat condos, only with chess pieces perched on platforms instead of sleeping felines.
Kind of a knick-knack holder.
I like to put my trinkets on level 4. This sounds like a pretty cool thing. And
there's pictures of it at the bottom of the article, towards the bottom of the article.
Yeah, how to assemble your cat condo.
Yes. Yeah, and it's interesting that he said it is nothing to do with Star Trek and blah, 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 yet I'm happy to go to the conventions and sell it. Them.
Right.
Hey, I was going to say, it has nothing to do with Star Trek, but look, every picture he's with James Doohan, and he's got the engineering-looking uniform on, or the Star Trek, the Wrath of Khan.
He's dressed up in costume.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's the easier way to say it.
He sees an opportunity.
God bless the capitalist pigs.
But, as much as Star Trek fans were drawn this 3D chess set, I think there's something else that could draw people as well. And Craig is going to talk about it.
Let's levitate this to a new level.
I'm not playing this time.
So the Star Trek tractor beam could levitate humans, scientists say. Oh, I need to read the article.
I was going
to
say, that's it. They just say that. They don't back it up at all. They just say it. And then they walk away. Drop the mic and boom, they're gone.
And by the way, global warming is... No, so the prediction of science fiction writers move closer from reality. Closer to reality. After scientists unveil a tractor beam that could pave the way for levitating humans. Engineering at University of Bristol said that they had tested the world's most powerful acoustic tractor beam, which can visibly ensnare and levitate objects.
So can David Copperfield.
Yeah.
Amazing.
He did that with the Statue of Liberty, right?
No, he made that disappear.
Oh, disappear. Sorry. So for the first time, scientists have shown it's possible to trap stably objects larger than the wavelength of sound in an acoustic tractor beam. The discovery opens the door to the manipulation of drug capsules or microsurgical implants within the body. It also makes the levitation of human beings a possibility. Yeah, I'm a little confused because they're talking about something small and then something so big. Researchers previously...
They're small humans. They're babies. Yeah. They're small humans.
So researchers previously thought that acoustic tractor beams were fundamentally limited to levitating small objects, such as previous attempts to trap particles larger than the wavelength had been unstable with objects spinning uncontrollably. Working tractor beams can move heavier objects made of different materials, operating both in air and water, without damaging the traps, the trapped objects. And they go on to there's a video explaining or demonstrating some and talking a little bit more about the behind the scenes with how this works. So I think it's pretty cool. I did watch the video and you could see the little thing, little ball kind of trapped in there and they turned it off and it fell, just demonstrating it.
It looks like a a party thing that you would buy at Disney or something that he's using as the tractor beam. It looks like a giant flashlight with all these pretty wires.
Yeah, the kids spin.
Yeah.
I like the picture of Scotty, McCoy, Spock, and Uhura staring off in the same direction, all with great intent and focus, like it's fourth down and 1 yard to go for their favorite team.
They're watching the big game.
Right.
They should have embedded the video right beside to the right of that picture.
They're all watching that. Put up on the view screen.
That would have been funny.
Fascinating.
Well, we're going to go from something fascinating to I got nothing. We're just going to go to the next story. Okay. This is Gene Roddenberry's original pitch for Star Trek. Some of you may know a little bit about this, but this is an article that comes to us from Sci-Fi Wire. It was nearly 54 years ago that a TV writer named Gene Roddenberry came up with a pitch for a show that he described as Wagon Train to the Stars.
Giddy up.
Which we know today as The Orville. No, as Star Trek.
Bonanza.
I was very, very confused here. Yes.
And as Seth MacFarlane blazed the trail and brought it to show to...
Roddenberry, a former pilot and police officer, had begun steadily writing for various TV series in the mid-1950s, but longed to create his own show. After several of his ideas for pilots were rejected around Hollywood, he came up with the idea of a multicultural crew journeying through to the stars on a large spaceship. Actually, first he came up with Lieutenant, but let's move past that.
That pilot he had for that talking toothpaste really just wasn't going anywhere.
Well, you know, calling the show Star Trek, he wrote up a 16-page treatment on March 11th, 1964 that would become the first documented blueprint for the series.
And where is that 16-page document now?
Why, there is a link to it in the article. So if you go to...
It's on the internet.
He uploaded it to Google Drive.
Yeah. If you go to thetopicistrek.com and check the show notes for episode 13 to this article, you'll see a link in there to see, the bells are going off the charts. So a few of the things that are talked about in the treatment are, first of all, the crew, and we have the captain of the ship, and the captain is Robert April. The first captain of what became known as the Constitution-class USS Enterprise was not Christopher Pike or James Kirk, but Robert April. And it's April who was designated the lead in Roddenberry's original pitch. But Roddenberry's original description of the character featured many traits that found their way into Pike and Kirk. A tendency to go quickly into action, a drive to put himself at risk above others, and a continual battle with loneliness of command.
Hey, also, you just described my career.
also has the sidekick and the punch from the roundhouse punch. Anyway, but April did make an appearance, as you know, in the Counterclock Incident episode of the animated series. Mm-hmm. We also talk about number one, and in this case, number one is the female on the bridge. This character, an icy, logical, somewhat enigmatic woman who served as the ship's executive officer, did make it into the first Star Trek pilot, The Cage, where she was played by Majel Barrett. And then executives said, oh, we don't want any of that. They also didn't want anything of the first lieutenant, which was Spock's character, but we got Spock again in the second pilot.
Wait till Voyager.
Yes. Other characters included Dr. Philip Bones Boyce, a pragmatic doctor and reluctant space traveler who transformed more or less intact into Dr. Leonard McCoy, which is interesting because the doctor in the first pilot didn't seem to have those traits. It's like they reworked the character and then worked it back again.
Oh, you're right.
It's kind of strange. This article also goes on to talk about the ship, which was originally the USS Yorktown, not the Enterprise, the transporter and how there wasn't one, weapons, and the weapons were going to be rifles, and pistols that fired either bullets, tranquilizer pellets, or explosive projectiles. So I'm glad we didn't end up with that.
Or silly string. We're not sure which yet.
Oh, yes. And also we have outlines of a couple of stories, some of which were made into episodes, some of which were transformed into other episodes, some of which sound very, very familiar. And I think one or two that just never got made in any form, if I recall correctly. So that is an article you can check out in its entirety. It's a very interesting historical document to go through and say, oh, this is where it all started. Yeah, it has a very, very interesting origin. And speaking of origins of things, you can go from this side of the universe to the other side of the universe and find the origin of, I got nothing again. So we're just going to go right to the next article.
You had to give me this one that involved heavy physics, didn't you?
Well, you know, it's just, you're on medication. You can get through this.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it'll totally make sense. Just like listening to Pink Floyd.
Yeah.
All right, from Forbes.com, which is supposed to lend some credibility to this show. Could Very Star little. Trek Discovery be right about parallel universes? Vaulting Ambition, Season 1, Episode 12, Recap. The idea of parallel universes has been around for about 60 years or so now, giving a theoretical physical existence to all possible outcomes of our reality, including the ones that didn't occur. In our current reality, once a quantum decision is made or an observation constrains the possible remaining outcomes, these other universes must split off irrevocably from the one we inhabit. Are you confused yet?
Uh-huh. Yes, okay, but I good. Started that way, so it's, you know.
In Star Trek Discovery,
that way.
In Star Trek Discovery, however, there remains a connection between the universe where the original crew is from and the mirror universe, which split off from the original timeline some 200 years ago. As we learn more about the two different universes, we find commonalities, people, relationships, even wars and betrayals. After an incredible plot twist, we finally discover why. But the question of how to make this possible lingers. All right, and then they go through a recap of the show. We're not going to, no spoiler alerts here.
We'll talk about that in a minute anyway.
Yes. So.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that. And they also get into the pretty heady physics of it, the science of it, okay? There's a lot to unpack, but the biggest point to address is the idea of parallel universes. Quantum mechanics offers a variety of, a very different picture of reality I'm losing it on that. Okay. We normally think of things classically when it comes to physics in terms of straightforward laws like cause and effect or action and reaction. This is what we call a deterministic universe. Wow, I feel so Neil deGrasse Tyson all of a sudden.
You need a vest. You got a vest?
I could put on my bow tie, then I'll be Bill Nye. Will that work?
Okay. Cosmos, the next generation.
This is what we call a deterministic universe, where if you're given the initial conditions and the rules that govern things, you can predict it with arbitrary accuracy. What will happen in the future? In quantum physics, however, you can only know the probability of a variety of outcomes, and the outcome itself isn't determined until you make a measurement or observation that depends on what the outcome was. Have you guys ever looked at a high level view of quantum physics?
High level meaning I've read the two words quantum physics together and then just walked away. Yes, yeah. Absolutely. It's like string theory. My theory about string is the string, you use it to tie things. That's my theory.
The cat and plays with it.
Yeah, that's kind of it. You know.
Yeah, quantum physics is mind blowing.
This article gets extremely dense with. All sorts of information. But if you would like to read through it, you can go to the topic is trek.com, show notes, episode 13. And again, this is the Forbes article, and its title is Could Star Trek Discovery Be Right About Parallel Universes? Well, of course it can be right about them. It's Star Trek.
Well, you know, and everything that Star Trek comes up with turns out to be true anyway.
Yes.
And to answer your question, Chuck, I had trouble getting through a quantum leap.
Yeah, because What's the Enterprise captain doing on that show?
Right. It's very confusing. It's all parallels, and it just doesn't make any sense.
Right.
So it's time to close out of our subspace chatter and head on to our main mission, which is just more buttons being pushed, I'm sure.
The angry tribbles, I guess.
Well,
there's a tribble on that button.
So move that aside. It's my chicken salad sandwich and coffee.
It was.
And we have to hit the spoiler alert.
Oh, do we have to?
I'm afraid we do.
Spoiler alert.
Just one tonight.
Yeah, that sounds, that's one is enough. You guys get the idea, because
I worked hard on that thing.
Well, we use it all the time, just sparingly.
Craig, copy and paste does not make a masterpiece.
Hey, to go find the klaxon sound, that same one, that was hard.
Why didn't that you just hard. Use this one?
No.
Had to be different.
I had a vision. I made it happen.
He wanted negative control at helm, and he wanted it now.
He's not canon.
Yes, it is.
We are going to be discussing episode 11 and episode 12 of Star Trek Discovery. And boy, things are starting to really roll fast in these episodes as we race toward the end of the season.
Well, we're also finding out some of these internet theories are popping true. I mean, these are pretty insightful people to be recognized as things we were talking about before Christmas. And now the actual theories are proving true.
Right. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think that that's something that maybe the producers will think about for next season, going, you know, if we do it for one or two episodes, they probably don't have time to think about it. But if we give them like months, they're going to figure it out before we get
and
there.
And clues in every show.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, they did a good job, though. Yeah, I appreciate clues in every show, because I don't like something where there's no clues whatsoever. It's just like, boom, there it is.
Surprise.
You know, where did that come from?
Well, it can also not work. I just watched, from the Looper channel on YouTube, was the big plot twist that didn't work. And I was like, oh, yeah, there's some of those didn't work. Not Star Trek necessarily related. So giving people a long-term thing and you got some clues and stuff, I think it works a lot better than just going boom in your face.
Absolutely. No, they've done a really good job at the story arc for this whole season.
So in our first episode, The Wolf Inside, we get the final coming forward of Tyler as Vok. And all those theories, we kind of got the first glimmer of that when he did something in the previous episode, a little nasty, you know, killing Culber. That kind of was maybe a tip off that things weren't quite right.
Well, I think your first clue was when he said he was on board that ship for 7 months.
Yes. Yeah. That
didn't add up.
Right. That one, I think, was really the one that tipped everyone off that there was something not quite right here.
Because, well, even the captain looked at him like, what?
Well, I mean, because we knew something that Lorca didn't know. Of course, Lorca knew something we didn't. It's all getting confusing here.
makes you wonder how much more Lorca doesn't know that.
Right. Right, because he wouldn't know that Tyler was a spy because... But Lorca doesn't know that Laurel hasn't been on that prison ship for 7 months.
True.
Right. I mean, he shows up, she's there.
Right.
He says he's been there for 7 months and he's been, you know,
you kind of have to take him at his word. Only us, the viewers, know where Laurel and Vok were before.
He did explain to Lorca that his captor had taken a liking to him.
Right, but his
captor... I guess
they
didn't really know who.
Well, no, we find out that the captor, because we see her, we see that it's Laurel.
Right. I mean, from Lorca's eyes, he obviously didn't know.
Right, exactly. Lorca would have...
No, wait,
have
he no met clue. Her. She tortured him.
She did, yes, but
after he got on board the ship.
He has no idea that she wasn't there before.
He doesn't have any context to how long she's been on that ship.
Okay.
So also in this episode, we have Tilly trying to rescue Stamets, and things look like they're going really well, and then all of a sudden, he's dead.
Yeah.
And I find it interesting that not only was there no medical personnel in the room while they're working on this stuff, but after he dies, apparently they just leave.
I thought the same thing. Is like, that's kind of weird.
Because the next week, he's still in there.
Well, he's kind of still in this chamber, so he's fine.
Oh, they left him in there for a week. It kind of got a little funky smelling over the...
Well, yeah, if you close that door, it's airtight.
Oh, good. Yeah, and then they release the spores. They're kind of like Febreze.
We also see Lorca in an agonizer booth an awful lot.
It's like his new apartment. I like it here.
And we get a big reveal that I called ahead of time. That Giorgio is the emperor.
Yeah, you called that one. I did not see that one coming.
And well, that happens in one episode.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say I exactly called it, but as soon as it happened, I was like, it makes total sense that she's going to see ghosts from her past, and that would be not, you know, what's his name was only one, you know, of course.
Connor?
She's gonna see. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you're going to see Giorgio as well. So that made sense.
That poor actor. He had to die twice.
No.
Yeah. Hey, the series isn't over.
That's right. He could come back and die again. Because maybe they reset the universe when they come back, and suddenly they're back at the Battle of the Binary Star, and they get to make a different choice.
No,
or something.
Don't do that. No, that's called cheating for the writers.
At the end of the whole series, turn away. Okay.
Then this week we get Vaulting Ambition, and in this one we find out that Lorca is from the Mirror Universe.
Oh, you just jumped to the last bullet item.
Begs the question, how did he get to this universe?
Right.
Probably on the Defiant.
No. Because if you went via the Defiant route, you go crazy. I went back and I watched the Tholian Web right after that on Sunday
because
night.
Because it's that interspatial rift.
Yeah, it goes back and forth.
It messes with the brain and the synapses, and you pretty much go insane.
Yeah, I watched it.
So what I think is another thing that happens in this episode, or at the very the end of the previous episode, is that Stamets meets Mirror Stamets, and they're both lost in the mycelial network. When they get out, Mirror Stamets is on the flagship, is on the Charon. And I think that somehow he was working with Lorca. And since it is that jump/mycelial network technology that got the discovery into the Mirror Universe, that somehow those experiments got Lorca into our universe.
That's kind of what I'm thinking too, is they weren't quite good at it in the Mirror Universe, and he accidentally got over here, so he had to sort of round up the same people and say, well, let's see, I was working with Stamets over there, so I need Stamets over here. I gotta go find Michael Burnham, because whatever her part is, I think he probably could have done it without her, but you know, it's kind of I'm waiting for that to get unwound, because I'm not completely putting the pieces together myself.
Right. We understand why he got the head of security that he originally got for the Discovery, because that's the our universe version of the person in his universe. Cause we see her, I forget the actress's name or the character name. I should have had that information. That she's on my dead list.
Dead list.
So I have to, put her back on the live list again here for a second.
What happened to the original Lorca in our universe?
Right. That is indeed a question.
That's an unanswered question.
Commander Ellen Landry.
Right, which is Landry and Lorca was very hard to keep those two straight. I'm wondering what the story was with the Baran, because did Lorca blow up the Baran and take Lorca's place?
Yeah, I think that has something to do with how he got here. I think
because he was the only survivor.
Yes.
That's probably it. That's probably his excuse, or his gateway in.
Is probably the Baran probably went through that space, that unstable space or something. I don't know. I'm just taking a guess here. And somehow he ended up in our universe and the ship went, you know, I don't know, went crazy. And he's the only survivor. I don't know. Just a thought.
Because it struck me odd, even at the time when he's talking about how he blew up the ship so that his crew would, you know, not be captured by the Klingons.
Yeah.
And the first thing I thought of is, why aren't you on your ship? Why are you the only one not on your ship? You're right. The captain. Shouldn't you be the last one on the ship?
That's right.
So I
think the Baran has something to do with how he got here.
Mm.
That's my thought.
That could be. If they start digging into more of the redacted documents around the Defiant, they might find that out as well.
Mm-hmm.
Right, because we also find out that the information that they have on the Defiant, they don't have it all. That it was very redacted information, and so we still don't know. We still haven't seen the Defiant. All we've seen is that wireframe of it from a couple of episodes ago. Will we see the Defiant? I don't know, because at this point, I think we're struggling to figure out in the story, knowing that the path of going through the dimensions the way the Defiant did doesn't work for people.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know that we need to see the Defiant. I don't think that's.
I got the impression we were not going to see it because she got the data files from the Defiant. I guess it was in the Shenzhou's data banks and sent it over to Discovery.
Well, it was, but they found out that it was all redacted.
Right.
They didn't have enough info.
That's right. That's right. That's right.
And they were going to look for that on the Charon when they got over there. But I'm just thinking, do we count that completely now because Giorgio has said that doesn't work with people? Because she said, well, that doesn't work with people, so how did you get here?
Yeah. I want your technology, your engine.
And don't you just love the way that Giorgio asked Michael Burnham to pick out a Kelpian.
Yes. No,
you know what?
That one. And then later they're eating that one. Wow. That's like, I don't think I'm ever going to the restaurant and picking out a lobster the same way again.
He said, here, try the gangula. It's tasty. I'm like, oh, no.
Yeah. No. Well, I think the way Sonequa, you know, did that scene was perfect. It's just like, I don't, and just, she's almost choking and she has to swallow, you know, liquid really fast. It's like,
yeah. I hope Saru doesn't find out about any of this.
Well, that's the thing is like not, I mean, she'd already lied to him that she didn't see any Kelpians when she already knew that there was one on board.
She ate one.
Now she's eaten one. It's like, you know, I don't know if there's any, Kelpians in the Mirror Universe, Saru, but I think if there were, they'd be very tasty. I don't.
After this whole thing's said and done. All right, Saru, look, I'm going to come clean. There was actually a slave version of you. I'm sorry I lied. Okay, that's no problem. That's got to be the worst. No, actually, it gets a little worse.
Funny story.
Saru, I've got something to tell you. I'd like to have you for dinner.
Yeah, you know, yeah. You're actually quite tasty.
We also get an awesome scene where Giorgio, who has a big long sword, is about to execute Burnham, and then Burnham reveals, I am from the parallel universe. So Giorgio puts back the sword, takes out a little disc, and pretty much wipes out everyone in the room.
And what was that all about?
Well, my feeling is that it's very secret information that there is such a thing as the parallel universe with the United Federation of Planets.
And she saw an opportunity saw an opportunity for her, I guess.
Well, being an emperor, she wants to conquer the other universe as well.
Because she couldn't obviously not kill Michael because she just told in front of everybody and say, you know, because she said, she basically laid it down. I'm getting ready to do this. And then Michael said what she did, said, and she couldn't just go, you know what? Let's hold on. And everybody be like, what?
What? Except that one guy who gets to live because he's really good at mopping things up off the floor. So,
yeah. Hey, I liked in After Trek, they mentioned her little throne. It looked like the World Series.
The Stanley Cup.
No, it not does. The World Series.
Right. The World Series has all the posts with the flags on them. Yeah.
It does look like that, though.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I got the impression she was like, okay, I cannot kill her now, so I got to kill everybody else. Otherwise, they're gonna call me out on it.
I thought it odd though that on the After Trek for episode 11, they were talking about the Emperor's sword and how Michelle Yeoh had like some influence or some advisement because she does martial arts. Mm-hmm. That sword looked like it was more of a Conan sword. That was not what I would expect for. It looked too heavy. You know what I'm saying? I would have expected something more like a katana. Lighter, thinner, faster.
Why don't you call her out on it? You know, show up sword next time she's at a...
We'll get her on for an interview. Hey, tell me about... Why did you choose this big, heavy, clunky sword? I mean, it looked great, but it just didn't look like something you'd want to go into battle with.
Well, her sword, if I'm... Her sword looks like the sword that is the emblem of the Terran Empire.
Was it?
Yeah, the handle it has like the squared off, not the sheath, but the handguard is straight across and down. So I think that's what it's meant to resemble. And so she probably had input into various aspects, but they wanted it to resemble that sword.
I'm looking online. I've come up with some of the classic ones with the sword going through the globe.
So this makes great listening, people.
Yeah. Well, wait while I type in Google searches.
Watch me or listen to me search.
Yeah. Just do some typing.
Hey, there was a nice scene between Stamets and Culber, you know, when they're saying goodbye, but I wonder if that's really goodbye.
Well, that's what I'm wondering as well, is that we heard before that Wilson Cruz said that, you know, the story isn't over yet. Now, that was before we had this episode. And I'm wondering, okay, that's a satisfying coda to their relationship. Are we now thinking that Culber is actually going to remain dead, or do we think that that character will be coming back at some point?
If Connor can come back,
I'm going to say he's dead, but we may be able to revisit him in this sort of network space where Stamets and
Memory Alpha has him listed as dead, deceased.
Wilson Cruz was saying that his best scene that he's ever done in 25 years is still to come. And I was watching Vaulting Ambition going,
with Vaulting Ambition.
Was that it? Was that it? Because I didn't think there was, I mean, he's a good actor, but he kind of built it up. And I was expecting something that wasn't in that episode.
Right. I felt the same way.
And we don't know. I think that I have the same thought as you, Craig, that it's possible that we will, you know, one of the possibilities we will continue to see him, but he only exists within the network.
Right.
Yeah.
Because Tilly also said something in her techno babble about life and death and the network. And while I don't think you can, you can't bring people back from the dead. How did Stamets come back? Or was he just in a deep coma?
They pronounced him dead, right? I mean, they used the paddles on him and they just kind of called it.
And then walked away.
And then walked away.
He literally died and came back in the same episode.
It's true.
And what of Mirror Stamets? What's he up to now?
I thought it was very interesting in the scene where they're walking in the corridor, in which Stamets is kind of, you know, relating things to being on board the Discovery. When he's talking about the fact that Mirror Stamets says that he was doing some stuff and he kind of accidentally had an, you know, mishap with, he was like shooting a glance over to Stamets, like, are you buying this? That this is actually how I got in here? Because I'm hoping you are, and I can just move on.
Nobody in the Mirror Universe is honest about anything.
Exactly. It's like, don't trust this guy, because why would you? It's just like Jason Isaac said the other day. Someone asked him on Twitter, well, are we going to see actual Lorca at some point? Is Mirror Lorca going to come back? Blah, 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 blah. And he goes, I could tell you anything I wanted to, but why would you believe me? I've been lying to you all season.
I love that. That's so great.
So I think the same thing here is like, what do we really know about what Mirror Stamets was doing?
Well, you know, the thing about the Terran people is as soon as they play their cards or lay them out, they're ripe for dying. So who knows what he's doing, what he's up to.
All I know is that apparently now they're very sensitive to light, a fact we never knew before and haven't known since.
But we can take advantage of it.
We certainly can.
Hey, they need to bring the sarcophagus back, the Klingon death ship, and turn the light on.
That's right.
Okay, Google, set living room to 100%.
Curses! Hey. Foiled again!
My phone is trying to do something.
I get one more thing to add, and that's the Charon.
Yes.
At first, they showed that ship from the exterior about 3 times. Yes. And they showed a small part of it, and I was like, wow, that looks pretty big. Then they show another part of it. Well, that looks pretty good. And then they show it, and it looks like it's got a sun.
Yeah.
And I was like, what? This thing is huge.
Right. So, it's insanely huge. The review that I'm writing for the episode, I just say that is just ridiculously large. It's uncalled for large. Some people were speculating that because the Terran Empire has conquered other races, that is, was it the Romulans that used a singularity in their,
for their travel.
Right. So there's, you know, kind of saying, well, kind of could be based on that. I mean, you have the circular spaceships that are, we have Vulcan ships that have that kind of round design. Is this like supposed to be this mishmash of all these different conquered technologies or something? I don't, you know, I have a problem with it on a lot of levels, including how does that technology relate to the fact that within 10 years or so, you're going to have Mirror Kirk and Spock and everybody trading places in a Constitution class starship.
Right.
I think they went a little too far with the Charon.
Yeah.
That's true. Yeah. I would even argue this. They probably did also on the Discovery, because some of that stuff looks very, you know, Kelvin universe stuff, you know.
Well, I don't mind most of it. I mind the holograms most of all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because they didn't. Introduced the hologram kind of thing on Deep Space Nine. I just watched it.
How much of that technology did Lorca bring from the Mirror Universe, though?
Ooh, well, that's an interesting point.
You know, we didn't really find out exactly, you know, suddenly Michael Burnham's brought on board the Discovery and they've got this thing they're working on called the Spore Drive. Hey, where the heck, you know, and we all did it. We went, what? Where did that come from? That's not canon.
Well, he just appeared in the regular universe like the Terminator, naked and crouching.
Give me your claws.
And fan fiction is born. But anyway, folks.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, I do want to add, aside from all this talk, I watched the TED Talk with the real Paul Stamets.
Yes.
You know, and I don't know if you guys have seen it.
No.
My eyes glazed over with some of the, because there were a lot of the words they were using to describe you know, all the different spores and mushrooms and all this stuff. But it was kind of fascinating just like to see how far reaching this mycelial network is, especially here on Earth.
Do you think you can throw a link to that into the show notes?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, okay. It would take me like, I got it. I would definitely say watch it. It was like 15 minutes long. And again, I was like, okay, I'm starting to lose. He's starting to lose me because some of the words he's just throwing out there, like it's his common language, but I don't.
Yeah.
Organisms. But it's really cool.
But you can get the idea. And I was like, wow, that is really, really fascinating. So yes, I'll put that link in there. I think I got another talk of his as well. So,
all right. Yes, have we beat those two episodes to death yet?
We have indeed. Okay. It is time to return. What? No, stop. Stop now. we'll talk more in 2 weeks when we have two more episodes. We're getting close to the end, folks. Getting close to the end of the season.
No.
But it's time now to return from our main mission. Good thing that tribble is gone, finally. And it's time for our warp speed roundtable.
We cleared those out.
Yes.
Oh, crap.
Oh.
These things are like rabbits.
Only had one left. One left.
Stop.
How did this
happen? Petting your tribble, Chuck.
Be sure to spay and neuter your tribbles.
Thank you, Bob Barker. And it's time now for our warp speed roundtable. Now that we're safely back on board, we're going to take on one rapid-fire topic and get everyone's opinion on this one. This is a game we've played before, and it's called Shuttle Pod or Airlock. We're going to give a character, and each of us is going to say whether or not we think the person deserves a shuttle pod or the airlock, and why.
And none of this airlock where you can pick them up later. Oh, wait, no. Tyler was beamed out into space. He wasn't really airlocked.
Was.
Okay.
He was.
No rescue missions on these.
That's right. It's just they're gone. They're gone. They're like the first three crew people on the episode.
Right.
Just out there and they're done. So this time around, the character is from Star Trek: The Next Generation. The character appeared in three episodes, Where No One Has Gone Before, Journey's End, and Remember Me, which I think I have those transposed, those last two, and it's The Traveler.
Uh-huh.
The kind of a interdimensional being who existed on a different plane.
Easy-talking alien.
Yeah, kind of did a lot of interacting with Wesley in all these episodes. Yeah, he
was Wesley's tutor.
So,
mentor.
I will ask, shuttle pod or airlock? And the first person I will ask is Craig.
Oh, good.
I say give him a shuttle pod.
Why?
Why?
Because he took Wesley with him.
Oh, snap.
Wow.
For the record, I didn't really have a problem with Wesley, but I'm just saying.
Okay.
Didn't see that one all coming. Right.
I will say next up, I will ask Chuck.
No, I'm shuttle asking pod. You.
You're asking me?
Yeah, I'm asking you. You go next.
All right. I will go next. I will say airlock.
Why?
The reason I say airlock is because, all right, the first time we see him, he's kind of backhandedly helping and giving much ego to Kaczynski, who he's working with. And he gets the Enterprise thrown into the M33 network, galaxy, then he gets them thrown into some place out of space and time altogether, and they barely get back again. So it's like, nice work. The second time we see him, so Wesley is doing an experiment based on the stuff that Kaczynski and the Traveler did, and that ends up getting Dr. Crusher almost killed. So good work on part two. And then the third time we see him, he shows up masquerading as someone else and says, "Yay, surprise, it's me, and you're much better than this, and you should come off with us." So he gets Wesley to quit Starfleet and go off with them, which clearly didn't even work out, because even though it's a cut scene in Star Trek Nemesis, Wesley is clearly back in Starfleet.
Yeah,
so even that didn't work out. So this guy
fail,
did
fail,
nothing
fail.
Good. Yeah, all fails. So airlock, Chuck.
I'm giving him an airlock, too. I just don't like him.
You didn't like him?
I just don't like him.
I just don't like him. Airlock for you.
You get honesty with medication.
All right, so the final vote is one shuttle pod, two airlocks, out he goes.
You know I need a sound effect for that, but we'll just use something like this.
Hey, I'm...
Hey, good.
Hey. That was one of those Ricard door opening in the spaces right there.
That was the cheapest airlock we could find. Yeah.
Hey, nothing but the worst.
You know what? I didn't know this until I was researching this for tonight. Is on Memory Alpha, they mentioned that Eric Minyuk, who played the Traveler, mm-hmm. he was actually a finalist for the role of Data.
Oh,
really?
Here's what it says. Minyuk was a finalist for the role of Data and was given the reoccurring role of the Traveler as a consolation prize. Gee, thanks.
Wow. Three episodes over the course of 7 seasons.
Oh, and I did find another Star Trek actor. Donna and I are working on watching The Blacklist on Netflix. Yes. And yes. The actor who plays Mr. Home, Lavoxana mm-hmm. Troy's yes. mm-hmm. suitcase carrier, the guy who looks like he's from Fleetwood Mac.
Lurch.
Lurch, yeah. He played Lurch in Adam's Family Values. He's in The Blacklist as well. We are enjoying that show. He's just got that distinctive head shape and the temples, and they didn't have to add a whole lot of makeup to him to exaggerate that head shape.
Very interesting.
Yeah, what's also interesting is he's going to be 70 this year.
Wow.
And he plays this roughly 40-year-old in the show, which was made in the last couple of years. Well, he actually kind of does look like he could play about a 40-year-old. He's in pretty good shape. He's not totally there. He's somehow mentally impaired. So they get into this game of the deadliest game where they're hunting people, and he's the guy with the bow and arrow. And in a way, I kind of feel sorry for him at the end. But I'm not going to spoil that show.
He's Katniss Everdeen.
not really.
Okay, that's even a bigger stretch than playing a 40-year-old.
Put on a big braid.
Well, it's about time to boldly go that away until next episode. But before we do, let's find out what's up with people or where they can get a hold of you or keep track of what you're up to. Chuck, how about you?
Oh, my goodness. Up to all kinds of things. You can find me and my goings-on over at ChuckTomasi.com. We're still putting out episodes of Podcasting for Dummies, the companion podcast, over at PodcastingForDummies.com. No, that one. Not that one. This one. Hit the wrong button. Now I lost track. Where was I? All our other podcasts, Craig and I do one called Technorama, which I'm sure a number of people for this show came over from there, over at ChuckChat.com. And all the work stuff I do, you can find on YouTube if you just look for ServiceNow. There's to be ServiceNow developer stuff. I've got a new series that's come out called Tech Shorts. It has nothing to do with athletic wear.
These fit pretty tight, but they're easy to work out in.
A little snug in the backside.
A little snug in the front side, too.
Oh, my. And doing a stream almost daily when I actually have the capacity and vocal capacity to get up and do that for ServiceNow as well as part of our community program.
Very good. So if you don't want service later, if you want service now, you know where to go.
That's right.
Craig, what's up with you? Where can people keep in touch with you or follow you or be very, stalkery or whatever they want to do?
Well, as far as social media engagement, I would say Facebook, if you can find me on there. But other than that, you can follow me along with Chuck on Technorama. And just search for Technorama Podcast, and you'll find, Twitter, the website, our YouTube channel, all that stuff. You just search for Technorama Podcast. And here, of course. But other than that, my blog is kind of thin until the Dog Days of Podcasting comes around.
Okay, which happens in August.
That's right. You should know that.
I
Where can they find more about the Dog Days of Podcasting if they want to start thinking about it now?
You can go to thedogdaysofpodcasting.com.
Excellent. And you can find me at comedyforecast.com. You can find me on Twitter at comedyforecast. You can follow my Facebook page, which is Facebook.com/comedyforecast. You get a theme going here, and Instagram comedy forecast, and it's all one word with the number 4.
So many bells. It sounds like one of those old service stations.
Lots of cars coming through.
It's oil a busy change. Day.
Check those
we need
tires.
To hurry up so they can go fill up their gas.
All right. So it's now time to engage the spore drive.
Oh, I don't know if I have a sound effect Damn for
it.
That.
Damn it. Get in the booth.
Just spin around. If you like the show, please be sure to tell a friend about it and subscribe so you never miss an episode. We'd love to hear from you. Follow us on Twitter at The Topic is Trek. Visit our Facebook page or visit thetopicistrek.com. Until next time, on behalf of Chuck, Craig, and myself, I'm Clinton, thanking you for listening. And as we always say here on The Topic is Trek, don't put on the red
blue shirt. I mean, red shirt.
So close.
Craig gets the airlock.
I need to work on my segues.